Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Kate Loving and the Collective Wisdom. My name is Kate Loving Schenck and I am the host of this radio show. My guest today is August Gold, co-author of The Prayer Chest, along with Joel Fotinos, a nonfiction book that underscores the power that prayer can have in our lives. The call-in number is 347-205-9200. August Gold touches the people who meet her. In fact, as I was preparing for this radio show, several people contacted me to say how August personally changed their lives. Joining me now is August Gold.
For having me on your show.
Hello, August. How are you?
Very well. Very happy to be here.
Thank you so much. Well, prayer is something that people of all religions are interested in, and maybe they don't admit it or they have some reservations. And I always like to say that prayer is a universal language.
Well put.
Yeah.
And I would add people of all religions and no religions.
Yes, absolutely right. There's no sense in even, in some cases, affiliating it with a religious background or orientation. But I understand that, I know you have written another book besides the prayer, or you've probably written many books that I don't know about, but The Prayer Chest is one that I have read, but I saw that, and I ordered the book that you wrote about prayer, joining minds, joining with another person to pray is a very powerful practice as well.
Yes, prayer partnering.
Yes.
Instead of praying alone, we come together and connect in consciousness and heart and mind and hold for one another the belief in answering the prayers that sometimes we can't hold and believe for ourselves.
Yes, yeah, so having another mind to join with, we often might feel the power more grandly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've been a practicing nurse for almost 30 years, and it was several years ago that I realized that when things were happening that were chaotic or otherwise unmanageable or seemingly unmanageable, to just say a quick prayer seemed to just order the whole situation, and it seemed like the angels moved in because I asked.
Because you asked, and I also think because when we ask, there's a place in us that understands we just can't do it all ourselves because we're not meant to. And as long as we insist on doing it all ourselves, I believe life will let us until the moment when we acknowledge, which is what prayer is, which is why I think everybody does it, we acknowledge we just can't control it all, fix it all, force it all, make it all happen the way we think we should or we ought to. And at that moment when we pray, I really think it is a glorious, quiet moment of surrender.
Yes. Yeah, I'll never forget, I was with a patient who, I'm a labor and delivery nurse. At this point I was. So what happened was the baby was born beautifully, but there was a retained placenta, and the doctor was digging and digging for the placenta, not to be, you know, too crisp. I suddenly said a quick prayer, and just like that, the placenta was released.
Mm-hmm.
And so ever since then, I've been always praying with my patients because, you know, obstetrics is a, oh my goodness, it can be high risk no matter, and sudden emergencies occur.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been taking the habit of always saying a little prayer throughout my whole time with patients. And
so it's kind of miracle. Like you are holding consciousness in the room while doing
yeah.
your duties. You're holding the door open to that higher vibration.
Yeah, it reminds me of just creating a loving field.
Mm-hmm.
That Dr. Leonard Lasko, I don't know if you know him, but he is my husband and my mentor, and he always he teaches his students how to hold a loving field. But more than that, or I shouldn't even say more than that, it's just opening the door for the angels to come in.
Lovely.
Yes. And then the other night, talking of placentas, one of the most extreme obstetric emergencies there is this condition called a vasoprevia. And it's not a placenta previa where the placenta is too low and they always and causes bleeding. But this is a placenta which has some very intense veins that are all over it that shouldn't be there. And then the umbilical cord is not adhering properly to its nutrient source. And usually they diagnose it and schedule a C-section. But this person had an undiagnosed one and delivered had a perfect birth.
Hmm.
And I just thought, oh, my gosh, you know, this could have been, I think the prayer averted an emergency, a terrible emergency, because babies always die. They say 100% of these situations that are undiagnosed, babies die. So I would like people to know that prayer is just a very important part of a spiritual practice.
Prayer is where we enter into the conversation with life itself.
Yes.
And we step out of our limited, smaller self and enter into that greater net of heaven that the Tao Te Ching calls that which connects us all. And when we mm-hmm. do that, our small human mind has access to that greater collective mind, the greater collective wisdom, where our
yes.
heart no longer loves with just the little bit of love as a human being. We love with the love of all being. So you're right. You hold that door open for the greater to come through into the individual smaller situations here on Earth.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Beautiful.
Wow.
You play that dual role, but I'm sure they don't pay you for that.
Oh, it's a priceless.
Right.
you talk about that is why you wrote the prayer test, is to write almost a parable for that situation that you just described, that it's hard to describe what you just said in a nonfiction kind of arena. So I think that the story you told with your characters really makes it clear that prayer and the people who and the prayer test is a beautiful image. I mean, it could be a metaphor, but I suppose people could have prayer chests.
Yes.
So could you explain to our listeners about the prayer chest, and if you have one yourself?
I do. Actually, I do. A prayer chest is, it can be seen metaphorically, as it is in the book. It can also be seen literally, because it is a very tangible, practical way to hold something in our hands and show ourselves that we are setting an intention and we are letting this intention go. And this box, this chest, represents that. Because mm-hmm. faith is a belief in something unseen, in things unseen. And that's the hard part of faith, is that we cannot see the source of life. We cannot see the flow, the Tao, the God. We cannot see it. So we're mm-hmm. asked to go within and to feel that energy and to believe and to know it from within. A prayer chest allows us to have something we can hold on to, because after all, we're human beings. And until mm-hmm. the time that we have that perfect faith, it helps remind us. It's a symbol of the faith and our willingness to put a prayer into the hands of the unseen source of life, and to walk away from the prayer just knowing, walk away in our faith knowing that that which we deposited in mind or in life has now been taken up and is being worked on, as Ernest Holmes might say, in the law of mind in action. It's being dealt with. It's being handled. Mm-hmm. And there's something very symbolic in putting a prayer into a box that's locked, into a chest that's locked, and walking away and doing what's right in front of you and knowing that you're being helped, you're being guided, you're being led, even while you're not thinking about how to make that prayer come true or not. It helps the human part of our nature.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Definitely a letting go of the thing that you've put there in that box.
Yes. Isn't that the hard part that you find for people? Is the letting it go.
Mm-hmm. Surrender.
Yeah, there's the word, surrender. And that's the word because I think we need to make it happen. We need to make something, to do something, to force or control something, because if we don't, it won't happen. Mm-hmm. And the discovery of prayer that you're speaking about in the moment of the miraculous births that are also high miracle moments and high danger moments is that in our surrender lies the ability of life to have the spaciousness to enter and assist.
Yes. Right. It does give, but lay the ground, as it were. We're perhaps using the ground and working it and planting the seeds that we need to plant for, to raise our vibrational level.
Yes. And we can't do it alone. And that's certainly a big message in the prayer chest is the first half of the book is about what happens to so many of us when we end up in our lives doing everything we think we should have done and finding that our dreams haven't come true. In fact, we've fallen so far short, that life is so hard, the burden is so hard, that we failed in so many areas. We don't have the love we want or the money we want or the job we want, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting is that what you're talking about is planting the seeds, which comes after the point that we realize the way in which we've been doing our life alone might be breaking down or coming to an end because we were never meant to do it alone.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And we think we were.
The American rugged individualist.
Exactly.
It's interesting because on November in 2009, I started a prayer blog. And I just wrote prayers every day for 365 days and then just continued 5 days a week. And the people who gather there are, sharing in the prayer, and then they write their own little hopes and dreams in the comment section. And it has become a little gathering place, which reminds me of what you said, that the minds are coming together to pray. And the prayer doesn't, these prayers don't have to take an awful lot of time. It's a kind of a short desire, wish, and hope for the good of all humankind, and the earth, and especially the earth and the creatures that live upon her.
And one thing that is so beautiful, I think, that happens to people who enter into this conversation of prayer, which to me is a conversation with life, you're entering into that conversation, is once you begin to speak your heart's desires out loud, you find that those things that you are longing for, is not just you longing for them, it is also life or God longing to give them to you, that it's a two-way conversation. And that's a misperception about prayer, that we're just there in a silent room throwing some words out towards the sky, hoping they're heard, when in fact, there's been a conversation going on all along, and that which your heart desires is desiring you.
I love that. I have to tell you this story because this I thought I would tell the story over the Thanksgiving holiday, and it just you can see how this would turn people off because for a variety of reasons. So let me just tell the story.
Oh,
please.
It has
to do with a young family having a young woman coming in, and maybe it has an ultrasound later on in pregnancy and finds that the baby is incompatible with life, quote, end quote, with, no kidneys, and the lungs and the heart are underdeveloped. Now, the baby was breech, and the husband is a minister. So the mother asked to have another ultrasound because she wanted to see if the baby had turned, because she really didn't want to have a C-section to bring this baby, into the world.
Hmm.
Husband, meanwhile, got together his prayer people. I guess a lot of times they're called prayer warriors, but I'm not sure if that's what he called it.
Hmm.
And he has a large congregation of people, and he just touched base with everybody all over the world who prays. Now this was you can't say that this was a bad ultrasound, because the ultrasound that was done on the baby originally was done with high-tech stuff. You know, it was done by specialists and so forth. So it wasn't,
okay.
And it was done by specialists who are very skeptical about anything that has to do with miracles. This was, I think, half the lesson here, because when they came back for this ultrasound to see if the baby had turned, the baby indeed not only had turned, but had lungs, had kidneys, had everything. And was a completely healthy baby. When the baby was delivered, the baby was fine.
Mm-hmm.
This blew the minds of these specialists and, of course, everybody else. So, you tell the story, and it just either, verifies what people know or believe, or it just makes people angry. Because, there's probably a lot of people who are also praying for similar results and don't get them. I don't even know what this was all about, but it was just amazing, really.
And what you say is so very true. People believe what they are ready to believe. So they're ready to see through their perceptive filter what they already believe about prayer.
Yes.
And if they don't believe something is possible, they won't see it. They can't acknowledge it, and they actually won't be able to see it. Which, I'll be honest with you, is one of the reasons why the book came out as a story rather than a self-help book. Because
yes.
In a self-help book, your critical mind is going to be reading and saying, oh, I'm sorry, I don't believe that prayer is answered. This is not for me. In a story, you're not talking to the critical mind. In a story, you're talking to the heart. You're talking to the soul of a person. This story enters all stories. We are human beings. We were born and bred on stories around probably the first fires ever made by man while we lived in caves, the first stories were told. And stories are something you feel. They enter you despite your critical mind, just as music does.
Yeah.
And when the story enters you, what enters with the story and the empathy for the characters, if you can identify with them, are the principles of truth.
Mm-hmm.
And the mind is not involved in saying, oh, I'm sorry, I can't believe that. You're just taking the story in whole. At a moment of crisis in your life, when a principle of prayer is needed in that moment, you're going to recall that story of Joseph Hutchinson or whatever the character is in the book you read, and you're going to say, gosh, that worked for him. I think I'm going to try that principle of prayer for me and see if it works for me, because it worked for him when he was going through his hardest, darkest time. That's the beauty of a story.
Yes. Don't you think, too, that people often say, well, that worked for him, but that stuff doesn't work for me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another resistance that people have.
Yeah, people have all the resistance until they begin the process of trying something for themselves. Because they let their mind make a decision for them that's deciding based on past experience rather than the experience in the present moment that would show them a more direct and personal expression of what prayer is, aside from everything they have in their mind that they believe, that they inherited, that their religion tells them. I mean, in the story of the prayer chest, that was the moment of breakdown and also breakthrough for the main character. He had a hard life, and the turning point for him was the breakthrough when he threw out everything symbolically in the attic of his house, and meaning the attic of his mind, he threw out all the furniture in a rage, threw out everything he had inherited, and was left with a clean, open, empty, spacious place. Not only in the attic of his house, but the attic of his mind. And when we let go of the beliefs we've inherited from our wonderful families, that they've inherited from their families, we end up with a clean slate and the ability to have a direct and personal experience with faith, with prayer, with the divine that doesn't, that isn't colored by what anybody else's experience was. And when we do that, oh my God, we find out what faith really is for us, how real the truth is, and not just the truth that's true for others, the truth that is true for us.
Right, and that's why people have that idea that it can't work for me because they are comparing themselves to somebody else.
Well, many of us have inherited our parents' faith and their parents and their parents. For thousands of years, we've been inheriting and believing in other people's ideas of what God and what life is and what we are. Well, you know what? Unless we find out firsthand and have our own experience, this is secondhand information, third hand.
Yes.
And it's not true for us until we have our own experience. I mean, Buddha said that. He said, be a light unto yourself. Don't believe it because I tell you. Believe it because you found out for yourself. And I think that's what you're saying. You're bringing prayer into a place where prayer is not, ought not to be, in a place of sterile medicine. And you're bringing prayer into it and finding, oh my gosh, it works. But it is hard to convince people who don't, who have inherited beliefs that say, oh, I'm sorry, medicine and prayer don't mix. And yet they do in your world.
August, I was cut off, so sorry.
Oh, that's all right. I'm right
felt,
here.
You probably felt a void there.
A void to take a breath.
Well, that's great. We were just talking about the ability to own your own experience and not the experience of the family that has been passed. You know, probably these things have been passed on for generations.
Yes.
Yes, that's so true.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that just an example of, I had a dog who is lying before me now, but who almost died in January of this year.
Mm.
And he had a terrible cancer. And, you know, he was basically, the vet told me that he was going to die. And we were just going to let that happen. But I tried at least 16 different things on him, all natural things. And including, you'll love this, we have a beautiful place nearby, about an hour away, called the Grotto of Lourdes in Maryland. It's near Mount St. Mary's College or University, and it's been there for many years and has a long history of the Catholic faith, which really goes far beyond the Catholic faith because people from all faiths go there. And even the director of the Grotto of Lourdes came on my radio show. He is a devout Catholic, but on the other hand, he really spoke to the universality of all religions, which I felt was so actually forward-thinking of him. So anyway, we would take Ulysses, the dog, to this place that has beautiful statues of Mary. And there have been many incidences where people have been healed through just a lot of desperate people go there, and then when they when they leave, there's a whole different vibration. It's a wonderful, wonderful place. It's in nature. You can meditate under trees, and the statue of St. Francis is there, and there's a huge golden statue of the Mother Mary as you are driving towards the place. You can see it.
Beautiful.
And it draws you there. Well, Ulysses, now, of course, he wasn't, I shouldn't say of course, but because he's a dog, he's not allowed to go into the place. But there is a beautiful mosaic of the Lady Guadalupe right before you enter. So for the week before we took him for the first time, he had had some urinary problems, and he had cancer of his penis, so he was having problems. We took him there, and immediately he jumps out of the car, and he urinates beautifully. That was the first thing. And then he laid down in front of this mosaic and raised his leg and laid there for a full half hour meditating with his leg up. This thing, this beautiful mosaic was beaming energy into his body. And he then went about just getting stronger and stronger. And I tried a lot of things. That was one of the most amazing things. And then we were able to have surgery of the tumor and the restructuring of the whole urinary tract system. And he is completely cancer-free. He's just a wonderfully healthy, vibrant, but very peaceful and calm dog. And we take him there as many times as the last time we took him there. He was sitting by the mosaic very peacefully, just absorbing the vibrations. And all of a sudden, 16 beautiful young girls came running over to him, and they all surrounded him, and they had me take a picture of them. And with their camera, and I actually got one really quick with mine, and off they went. And it was like so hysterical.
Right? And this is, you know, when they say the definition of faith is the belief in things unseen. We can't see this, but we can see the effects of it.
Mm-hmm,
and we
mm-hmm.
can't see what prayer can yield. We cannot see this world of the unseen, this connection from the source to us. That is why we need to enter it and experience it for ourselves, because once you have the experience, as you and Ulysses have had, nobody could talk you out of the reality of what happened, because it's your experience now.
It is, yes.
It's not something you read in a book or inherited from a teacher or a great aunt. It's yours. And that's where we want to get to, where you are in this wonderful solid faith, where it's the ground upon which you stand is so strong.
Yes, and then, of course, since people know the story of Ulysses, they will come and just touch him as if he's a holy figure.
Right. They begin to worship him. Right. That's religion also. When they, too, could have an experience if they just went to the mosaic and sat in front of it. Exactly.
I have never quite seen anything to equal it, and we go there as many times as we can, and it's certainly, I would call it one of those places in the universe where it's a power point or a high power source, and then I guess it has been said as much in some of the books I've read that this place is a big power source in the universe.
Mm.
So that's why I like to go, too. It's not like I know. It's not like I think that's the only place in the world where anything can happen. But, you know, it's just a beautiful place, and it's not too far away, and people actually go there from all over the world. So.
Mm-hmm. And the beautiful thing is what you said before, is any place in the world where you're at in the moment of need is a place where your prayer can be answered.
Yeah.
You know, having a child in a come into the world in a hospital, in that moment you reached out in prayer and your prayer was answered. In that moment. So anywhere you are.
Yeah, that's right. There's absolutely nothing like a newborn baby. They seem to be so wise.
Mm-hmm.
And and they know exactly what's going on. But people don't understand. It's interesting that to me, people think that the baby knows who they are because the baby has heard the mom or the dad's voice for 9 months. Well, that might have something to do with it, but I think it's so much deeper than that. And I think it's karmic. The baby is born and he knows these people because he chose them.
Yes.
Or she chose them.
Yes. That is a deeper conversation. I mean, that what you're speaking of is the deeper conversation, the deeper story of our lives.
The deeper story, yeah.
There's one story of what we do for a living and how we move through the earth and what we do every day. And there's another story. The surface story looks like what's happening to us. The deeper story is how what's happening to us is actually happening for us.
Uh-huh.
For our growth, for our wholeness, for our perpetuation into our destiny. That's the story that we enter when we open ourselves up to a prayer. That's what happens. We enter the deeper story. Beneath what's happening to me, we enter the story of what's happening for me. And boy, when we enter that story, life comes alive. It's miraculous. What is going on in our life that we can't see at the level of the invisible, the unseen, the source or creator is at work and at play in our life all the time. The conversation with the source, the creator and the creation or spirit in us, that's never stopped. Just because we're not listening, it doesn't mean that conversation isn't going on constantly. When we pray,
right. We're
entering that conversation.
What is happening to me as opposed to what is happening for me is a real revelation, I think. I like that turn of the phrase. It goes from being a victim.
Exactly.
Maybe to a victor.
Exactly. I don't think even maybe, certainly to a victor.
Yes.
Because once you're participating in your own life, you're no longer hopeless. You're no longer helpless.
That's right.
You're participating.
That is very powerful.
It changes, using your word, it changes your vibration of how you see yourself and how you show up in each moment, knowing that tomorrow, the future, your future, is not set by the beliefs of the past or your parents' beliefs or what they taught you about how unlucky we are, or as in the prayer chest, the curse that the Hutchinson family, the men, had over their heads. We all inherit these superstitions and beliefs, and we believe them. At the moment,
the main character in the book was so set in that belief that he was going to die young. How many people do that kind of thing? My mother died at this age, and so will I. I inherited this, or I inherited that disease, or it's like crazy.
Mm-hmm. And it's fear-based.
Yes.
And that fear that this is going to happen to me, that fear alone becomes the perpetuator of what ends up scaring us to death most of the time. Because we so strongly believe in what people told us their belief in what is true is. And we ate it whole. We inherited it, digested it, and we actually think it's ours. But it's not ours until we find out what the truth is for us, until we put out a prayer, until we enter the conversation with life and find out for ourselves what happens, we don't really know. We only know what was true for others, and faith is finding out what is true, if the truth is true for us. And
well, that's a beautiful definition of faith, because I think people get hung up on what is faith.
Yeah.
And that's a beautiful definition. Yeah. One that I think people can resonate with.
And so in the book, the helpfulness of the book, it's a story, but it is certainly meant to be helpful to people who want to find out if the truth is true for them. those are the three principles of prayer that we put forth in the book that Joseph had to walk through to be able to build his own faith, that we can all use to build our own faith, but we have to try them out for ourselves. We can't take anybody's word for it.
Right. That is so true. And how does this work personally for you?
Well, personally, I think in the 20 years that I've, well, 30 years that I've been on the path and 20 years that I've been a minister, these three principles of prayer that we call the, for him, they were the secrets of the prayer chest, but these principles of prayer are ancient, and they have been around for thousands of years, and they are truly, for some people, nothing new. They seem so simple, but to other people, they're so heretical. For example, the first principle is that the answer to your prayer does not come to you. The answer to your prayer comes through you.
Yes.
And that is radical. You mean
yes.
It's not going to come to my front door as a bag of money? That it comes through me means I've got to open myself up to receive it. So the places in me that are closed, I got to open those places. It means
yeah.
that there, if there are places in me where I'm hiding things about myself and don't want to let them out, I've got to take them out of hiding because it's got to come through me. I got to open to receive it. I've got to become the answer to my prayer. That's very different than I want the world to change. I'm not going to change, but I want the world to give me what I want without me having to change at all. That's real old-fashioned prayer. You petition a deity, you don't change one thing about yourself, and the answer to your prayer is put in front of your feet, and you're the same person after you receive the answer to your prayer as you were before. And that's just not possible.
Yeah, well, actually, that doesn't work that way.
I'm sure you found it doesn't. It can't.
No, it can't. It's as a matter of fact, when the prayers are answered, as they always will be if you ask, then, but maybe not in the way that you envisioned it.
Exactly.
So maybe it could really be that when the prayers are answered and not in the way that you envision it, then you miss it. You miss
That's
it entirely.
Exactly right. Because we only will say, that prayer was answered when we see the exact thing we prayed for. But
right.
the way prayer works, not how we wish it would work, but the way it works is this way, my experience only.
Mm-hmm.
We either get what we pray for or we get what stands in the way of receiving what we prayed for. So when we're praying for something, we're praying for something more than what we have now, more than exists now. What we don't realize is that when life hears that prayer, the essence of our prayer, what it hears is, I want to be more in order to have more. And so life begins the process of doing what it always does, which is to grow us into the more that we are asking for. And the moment we become more, of course we can have more because we've become more. So the answer to our prayer oftentimes looks like something that challenges us to become more open, to become more loving, to be a person who lets go more, who surrenders more, to be more than we are, so that we are more of an opening to receive the answer to our prayer. And we don't like that answer. We want the answer to the prayer, which is exactly what we want without us having to change a thing.
Oh, that's so true. I understand that. That is really very interesting. So it's a process of evolution, and prayer is not something that is anything different than what we are, who we are, what we are, what we're doing right now.
Yes.
Yeah.
That life, like it does in nature, it does with us in human nature. It's growing us. It's bringing us to our wholeness. It's completing us. But because we live oftentimes in this world, we look at life and we think life is a dead thing. God is a dead and dusty concept. We don't think of it as a living presence that is alive.
Within ourselves.
What is
yes.
that?
Within ourselves.
Within ourselves. Within mm-hmm. and around ourselves.
Everywhere. Outside, too. Yeah, everywhere.
Constantly, yeah. creatively pulsating, endlessly pulsating, endlessly creating. We don't see that aliveness. We think it's just a concept.
Mm-hmm.
So when we put
mm-hmm.
a prayer out, we don't realize that that prayer is going out into what the Tao Te Ching calls the web of heaven or the net of the universe. It's being captured. It's being held. It's vibrating. People can feel it. It's entering into the minds and hearts of everyone connected at that plane. We don't realize that.
Mm-hmm.
We just think we're throwing words out into, you know, an empty sky.
Yes.
When
yes.
in fact, our every word, our every deeply felt whole soul desire is felt by the whole plane of existence. When we know that, we then understand what Joseph Hutchinson found out in the book, which is when he put out a prayer, his whole community changed. They
mm-hmm.
all transformed.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it seemed like it was a prayer just to take care of his children, it turned
right.
out to be a prayer that ended up being take care of all the children.
Yes.
That's
I
how
just
powerful.
Love it, too, that he was able to do what he wanted to do with his carpentry and his making toys and his ability to just create for and make people happy with what he was creating
yeah.
and not do the thing and not do what he hated anymore. He turned everything into a workstation. It was just thing. He kept the animals that he loved, and it was really quite a beautiful story.
But isn't that what life wants for us?
For us.
I think we settle for so little. We say, just give me a job where I can pay my rent. And life is constantly pressing in, longing to give us the destiny. That's way
mm-hmm.
beyond the job, the destiny that we were meant to live. It
yes.
has so much more it wants to give us. The question is, can we, as you said, can we begin to open our eyes and recognize that the answer to our prayer doesn't look anything like we think it's going to, but the moment we put out a prayer, the answer begins to make its way through us from that instant forward.
Mm-hmm.
We need to look with different eyes, deeper eyes. You know, Robert Louis Stevenson, I always quote him, he wrote a poem. He is an author of books, but he also wrote poetry, A Song of a Man Who Came Through. And in it, he said, there are three strange angels knocking at your door at night. Have they mm-hmm. come to do you harm, he says? He says, no. Open the door and admit them. Admit them. The
mm-hmm.
angel comes, and you used that word a lot when we started speaking. The angel comes with the answer to your prayer, but it's a strange angel.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't look, it looks strange. It doesn't look like we think it's going to look, the answer to our prayer. And it's not coming
mm-hmm.
to harm us. Open the door. It's an angel nonetheless, even though it looks strange. The answer to your prayer is going to come in strange disguises, but we
mm-hmm.
need to open the door, because if we've prayed, everything that comes to us, and that's the third principle of prayer, everything that comes to us is a part of the answer to our prayer, and we need
mm-hmm.
to open the door and let it in.
Wow. That's right.
I'm sure you see that all the time in your work.
Yes, there's no doubt about it. And as we evolve and as life goes on, I think that it's beautiful to see that our lives can evolve like Joseph Hutchinson's life, where suddenly we're doing what we love to do and we're involved in the flow of life as opposed to going to a job that is disheartening
yes.
in many ways. Yeah.
Yes. And look, it came to him at the moment when he was at his lowest place. He had hit bottom. It comes to us that way, too.
It does. It does.
Where we break down and we don't realize we have so much shame about the breakdown. We don't even realize that on the heels of that breakdown is a breakthrough. thinking we have to do it all ourselves to finally leaning on a power greater than ourselves, a higher power, a deeper power within us. And when we do that, we find that it's not just a job. It's not just him being a carpenter, which was his biggest dream. Life's biggest dream was, why don't you take the carpentry and use it for the good of a greater community? Yes, you can build a chair, but wouldn't you want to change a community with those same skills? That's life's view, God's view of who we are. And when we enter prayer, we get a far bigger answer to our prayer than the little measly prayer we sometimes pray for.
That's so true. That's so true.
And you know that because you pray. You are a praying woman, so you must have had these experiences too.
Yes, yes. And it was very helpful to write prayers. I think that's a really wonderful thing to do. I enjoy doing that. It's it has put me into a flow of prayer, I'd say.
That's beautiful. You write them daily.
Yes.
And you then, still do.
I want to put these into a book. And so the book will be called Prayer Prescriptions, as opposed to, you know, I
love it.
I see so much people striving for drug prescriptions because of, I'm a nurse and I've been in the medical field for so long, that prayer prescriptions really suits what it is that I believe is much more important than you know, filling your medicine cabinet with toxic drugs.
Yes.
How beautiful. Filling your heart with prayer is going to be healing.
Absolutely. You know, in the Old Testament, there's a wonderful line where Spirit says to Moses, come up the mountain every morning and present yourself there to me face to face. And what that does, what that's asking of each of us, it's not about a story about Moses, it's about us being called to climb up the mountain, as it were, of consciousness, to climb up to a higher place in mind, which is what writing your prayers does. It takes you to a higher vantage point in mind, and in that higher vantage point, you can see what the Course in Miracles calls, it says there's a moment when you realize your problems have been solved, because from this high vantage point in mind, there is no problem. You can see how everything is perfectly, wholly, complete in the moment. And when you can see that, you can see how everything that's happening to you is happening for you, and you can take a breath and relax, realizing life is not working against you. It is working with you. It is working for you. And when you write your prayers, you're actually climbing that mountain of consciousness. And when you do it with your partners, you're doing it together and multiplying the power of standing at the top of the mountain and seeing your life from its highest perspective.
Yes,
it's beautiful.
To do that every day is something I would recommend for everybody. I mean, I think it's not something I would have to do. I would love to share that with other people. I think it doesn't have to take long, and it sets the tone for your whole day.
The book, The Prayer Partners, that you mentioned, that's exactly what we say. It's 3 minutes that you come together in the morning with another person and you share your prayer aloud with them. So you can hold their prayer. They can hold yours. You're climbing the mountain together. And what happens is you're greater than the sum of your parts. When two minds are joined together in thy name, oh, my God, you can believe more for somebody than they can believe for themselves.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah.
That's what you're doing, prayer partnering with all these people through the internet. I love it. What an outrageous way to use the internet for such high good.
Well, I think the internet is a beautiful example of what we can do for each other. I mean, I never would have met you, for instance, if it weren't for the internet, and we wouldn't be having this conversation.
That's true.
Yeah. I met, and there's people that I said in my introduction that have met you through the various avenues, which I felt to be very synchronistic in our meeting. It's so interesting how we are really not very far removed from anybody else in the whole world. Mm-hmm. And the internet proves that. That's
yes.
what's great about it. Yes.
Yes. And prayer takes it a step further and says, not only are we not removed, but our minds and hearts are already joined.
Yes, we're in a connection. It's so beautiful to know that we are all connected, and that's what prayer does for us.
Yeah, it does. And that's what we have to find out for ourselves. And that's what Joseph
yes.
had to find out for himself.
Mm-hmm.
He
mm-hmm.
had to find an authentic faith based on his experience. Otherwise, these are just words. People hear you say these words, we are all connected. It doesn't mean a thing until
right.
we enter into prayer together and we find out, oh my gosh, I've just had an experience that proved it to me.
It seems that the mystical side of life is something that is easily accessible through the practice of prayer.
Yes.
That we can become, you know, touch that mystical side of life, which really is that fulfillment that you were
yes.
speaking of.
Well, look, a lot of people raised in the old-fashioned teachings believe that only saintly people can have those mystical experiences, or monks or nuns or, you know, celibates
mm-hmm.
or people who are
mm-hmm.
really good. What we're discovering that's so outrageous in our generation is we are rediscovering the ability to have our own direct and personal experience of the divine without any
yes.
middlemen at all. And that is a faith that is a living faith. Then it's yours. It's a
yes.
living presence that you're in living touch with in the moment. And boy, once you have that, that kind of faith changes everything. We think, well, then I'll just be a religious person. It's not true. When you have that kind of faith, you become a bold person. You become a brave
mm-hmm.
person. You become
yeah.
a person who can take a leap of faith and know that there is the net of heaven beneath you, moving
yes,
you forward.
There's something about being a religious person that doesn't work anymore.
In the old sense.
In the old sense, yes.
Yeah.
Now, what you're talking about is the new sense.
The new sense of your religion, your spirituality, is not what you do on Sunday. It's how you live and
really?
Behave and think and act in word and deed in each moment.
Right.
Your
right.
church is right here in the moment. You're accountable in every moment. You're in touch with spirit in every moment. You know, there's an extraordinary verse in the Tao Te Ching, the Taoist philosophy of life, that says, heaven and earth have no preferences. Whether you're high or low, great or small, dark or light, everyone is welcome, and everyone
oh,
gets
beautiful.
A place to rest.
Mm-hmm.
That
mm-hmm.
is a very different kind of religion that I believe is sweeping the world right now. The religion of everyone is welcome because everyone is connected.
Mm-hmm.
Because everyone in essence is good. And everyone is divinely birthed, divinely created. And when we enter into a personal relationship with faith through prayer, through finding out if prayer works in our life or not, we find that out. We bump into not our sinfulness, we bump into our goodness.
Yes, yes.
And it's like, oh my gosh, I didn't know that was down there. I thought what was down there was so bad or so broken. Come to
yeah.
find out. What's
isn't
down
the
there?
Word sin, isn't the word sin just basically that they you've missed the mark? It's an archer's term.
Yeah.
And that mark would be love.
Yes. But boy, have we used it as a battering ram against
oh,
ourselves.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm, you're so right. That's a great definition of sin.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it just doesn't work anymore, these
mm-hmm.
these old concepts.
The old faith that we inherit. There is a teacher called Joel Goldsmith, and he says a crazy line, but it's so true. He says, our first life is doomed to fail. And on the one hand, on the surface, it looks so depressing. Our first life is doomed to fail. I've worked so hard. But in the deeper story is, like Joseph Hutchinson's story, our first life of inherited beliefs, of thinking we have to do it all ourselves, of taking other people's word for it, that life is doomed to fail because it's not built upon a foundation that is authentically, experientially our own.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what's going on right now. People want to know if the truth is true for them.
For them.
And they're going out and finding it out for themselves. That life built upon that true, authentic faith, oh, my God, that's the life that life has been waiting for us to build. Because that's built on, God, that's built on rock, a rock-solid foundation.
So I think that there's a lot to be extremely excited about in our in our lives and in our future. And certainly things are moving at a rapid rate, and we see a lot of collapse in our society, but those things that are collapsing are just like what we were saying about the old ways of thinking about religion and the old ways of thinking about sin and Jesus carrying a sword and, you know, that kind of thing. Those things are not true.
Mm.
I don't even think they're true for the people who believe them.
Yeah.
Because it makes them so unhappy.
They're is how you know if something is true. You know it by its fruits. And if the fruits of your religion, the fruits of your belief system are sweet and ripe and good, and not only feed you but feed others, then your belief system is a beautiful one and it is working for you. But if the fruits of your religious beliefs or your spiritual beliefs bring you unhappiness, and they're bitter, and they make you sour, and they shrink you instead of grow you, and shrink others instead of grow them, then you need to take a second look at your belief system. And you need to choose again. And the beauty is we can start today by writing out a prayer and leaving our house. There's something I ask people to do. May I suggest it now?
Yes,
an
please.
Exercise. It is so wonderful. You walk out of your house and you ask this question with all earnestness. You ask the question, show me your face. Mm-hmm. And what you're saying is to life or to God, you're saying, I want to see you. I want to see what you look like. I want you to show me who you are and what you are. Come to me. So that it may be made visible so we can begin to have this conversation. So a lot of times people don't know where to begin in the world of the secret source of everything, this invisible energy. And when you walk out your door, I can promise you, because I've been doing this for 21 years with people in my classes and congregants, and not only students but clients, something is going to happen in that week that is going to blow your mind. It will be a deeply felt new experience that comes to you, that a new thought, a new way of seeing something. Something's going to happen that's going to show you the living, the aliveness of the living presence of life coming to talk right to you. And you need to simply walk out your door and pay attention and wait for the answer for life to show you its face. And it's going to surprise you and it's going to delight you.
That's
but we need
question.
To see it and we need to ask that question. This is the
in
way
order
we,
to experience it.
Exactly. That's exactly right, in order to experience it for ourselves.
That'd be great to, so you do this and recommend to do this every day just as a way of staying awake.
Yes. Oh, that's well put. Yes. A way of staying awake. But you have to
go
out of your house listening and paying attention. Because if you don't, as you said before, you'll miss it. It'll happen you'll miss it because you're not there to see it.
Yes, in the present moment.
Yes.
Very important. Kind of the things that shake us. Make us stay right here and now.
That's right.
Well, believe it or not, we've come to the end of our hour, and I am so thrilled to have met you in this way.
Thank you so much
for being a guest in my
program. You're so welcome. Thank you for having me. It was wonderful speaking with you.
It was tremendous speaking with you, too. It was one of my highlights, so thank you.
And I'm so happy for Ulysses. I will probably never forget his story.
His story is just worth everything.
I know. That's the thing about stories, isn't it? You'll remember
yes.
the story long after the point. I love that you brought him into this conversation. Thank you for that. That was
a nice gift.
Thank
you very much. Thank you. And so I'm going to be playing music for Mother and Child. So if you wish to listen, you may. And blessings on your day. Please have a wonderful one.
Thank you.